Well, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. It's nice to have you all here with us. We've ended up with just one case on our submission docket, at least for oral argument today. And the case is Wiederman versus City of Arlington. And you all have checked in with our clerk. If clerk will announce counsel, please. All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, and may it please the court. I represent Jody Wiederman, a longtime resident of Arlington, was there since 1987. He's a taxpayer, and he also had registered to vote. Wasn't qualified to vote on the day that we filed the lawsuit, although he had already applied, but he was qualified before the May election. I wanted to begin by pointing out that the trial court granted a plea to the jurisdiction on the basis that he had no jurisdiction whatsoever, no subject matter jurisdiction. That's not correct, and we had filed a suit for declaratory judgment. That suit for declaratory judgment was to challenge the City of Arlington's legal right to call an election in the first place. There's a Supreme Court case on point. It's called Glass v. Smith, 1951, never been overruled, never been criticized by the High Court. That case says that there's an intellectual distinction between arguing about the substantive validity of an election outcome versus whether the governing body has the authority to call the election in the first place. If it's the former, then you can't do that in advance of the election outcome because we don't know how the election is going to turn out. It may not even pass. So why would we waste everybody's time with an advisory opinion in a conjectural situation? But if it's the latter, and that is the right of the governing body to call an election in the first place, that's justiciable right now, said the Supreme Court of Texas. Now, they're not in the minority. There are many, many other states that say the same thing, and we've cited those in our briefs. The reason is this. It can't get any more ripe than at the moment that the city, the municipality, has called the election. Because at that moment in time, when the election order is done, you have all the facts that you need to decide, is this or is this not within the strike zone of the city's ability to call an election legally? Why do I say that? Well, first, we have a petition that was a citizen-led petition. It's a so-called charter amendment document. I use the word so-called not to be pejorative, but to simply point out that what a citizen calls the document doesn't make it so as a legal proposition. And in fact, in another case that I handled that cited in the briefs, it was the City of Houston versus ATS, American Traffic Solutions, which is a red light camera vendor, the same vendor that had the contract here in this City of Arlington case. What Judge Lynn Hughes held in 2011, and this is in the record, is that calling this a charter amendment is nothing more than camouflage. The reality is that it's a referendum. A referendum, Your Honors, is an attempt to repeal, to eradicate, or to ban law that's already been passed. And in the Houston case, there had been a law already passed, but there was only a 30-day window of time to kill it. And so the citizens in that case, in order to try to indirectly do what they can't do directly, called it something other than what it really was. But the court said no. What we pled in this lawsuit here in the City of Arlington is the same thing, because the language of the so-called petition is identical to the one that was in Houston, word for word. And so we said that is camouflage. It's not a charter amendment pursuant to 9004 of the local government code. What it actually is a referendum. And that's important because the city charter for Arlington doesn't possess a right of referendum. When the citizens in Arlington, Texas voted their charter in, they chose not to give themselves a right of initiative or a right of referendum. And so the deck action that I filed on behalf of this citizen was, look, this document that you're calling an election on isn't a charter amendment. It's a camouflaged, illegal referendum, the right for which doesn't exist under the charter. That is a justiciable claim at the moment that we filed it and has nothing to do with injunctive relief. It has nothing to do with the separation of powers concern that the city has been raising from the get-go in this case about getting in the way of an election.
You're arguing that this was a justiciable claim at the time that you filed it. Let's jump forward to where we are today. And why isn't this moot?
Well,
they've terminated this contract under the at-will provision, be it there was an election or not, they've terminated it. So there's no more justiciable controversy, is there?
There is, and I think it's because we're mixing apples and oranges. Think about the party here. This is a resident who said, hey, you're calling an illegal election, you're going to illegally spend tax dollars on something you don't have the authority to call. On the question of terminating the contract, that would be an important issue of mootness vis-a-vis the vendor, ATS. ATS had a contract and it has a termination provision within it. If they terminated it and argued mootness, that might prevent the vendor from complaining. But the contract in its viability or its termination has zero to do with whether or not the city of Arlington had the right in the first instance to call the election. Second reason.
But whether they had the right to call the election or not, they had the right to terminate the contract under the at-will provision, which is what they did before the votes were even certified from the election. So why doesn't that put an end to the issue?
I'll tell you why. I already gave you the first reason. The second reason is this. That termination provision only was effective 90 days after notice, and this charter change document kills any notices of violation during the interim. And so what happens is a company like ATS, as red light notices are going out to the public via the mail, then those are property rights because ATS was having an interest, a financial interest in the collection of those. And yet this charter change document says all of those are dead. Now, those wouldn't be dead for the 90-day period that you have to wait between notice and termination.
About.
I'm sorry?
Your lawsuit's not about the, ATS is not a party to this lawsuit.
Exactly. That gun He's kicks
paying
us.
For it, but they're not a party to it. So what? How does that become an issue in this case, whether they're getting paid under the contract or not?
Well, what you said, that gun kicks as hard as it shoots. First of all, the comment that ATS paid for this, that's not in the record.
I don't know if they did or not. Well, I have no idea, and it doesn't matter.
Well, but that's not in this record, that ATS has funded this. Number two, Your Honor, you can't bait and switch between, well, we're not going to have a ripe controversy before the election, but once the election happens, now it's moot. It can't not be right and moot
it's
because then there's no
the
way to have
an
avenue of relief.
It's not what the election occurring that made it moot. It's the terminating the contract under the at-will provision that makes it moot, doesn't it?
It doesn't. Now explain why. I try to be very specific here. What happens after the election between ATS and this city has zero to do with whether the city had the right to call this election. Our declaratory judgment lawsuit was not about the outcome. It was about, do you have the right to do this? So for example, what if the city of Houston decided that it wanted to have a recall election for Your Honors? Well, that's not worth the paper that it's written on. First of all, there's no recall provision in this Arlington charter, and whether there's a recall provision in Houston or not is irrelevant because it wouldn't have any power over you. The area that the citizen is asking the government and the electorate to opine upon has to be still within the strike zone of their power. And what I'm saying is that here there is no referendum power. And that is a justiciable question the moment I filed that piece of paper that the court had jurisdiction for. The second problem, Your Honor, to elaborate further is this. The Texas Transportation Code specifically says in 707.002 that the city, in this case Arlington, has the discretion to decide whether to have a red light camera program or not. And yet, what this citizen petition does, it takes away that discretion and bans any future city council forever from implementing a red light camera program. That violates the general law of Texas. What Glass v. Smith teaches us is that the initiative power can be limited by the express or implied provisions of the charter itself. I've already talked about that. There is no right of referendum in this charter. But it also can be expressly or affected by state general law. Transportation Code 707-002 gives discretion. We all know from civics class that a current city council can't bind a future city council. So how could the citizens who are sitting in the hands or in the chairs of the legislature say, we're going to ban forever the discretion of a future city council from deciding that public safety is important enough to have this program, when the Texas legislature has specifically given them that power? And so when you run that through the analysis, what you realize is, hey, this is outside the strike zone. This citizen petition is not one that they have the power to do because it would violate state law. Now, here's what's really important. When we get into the issue about injunction and injunctive relief, that was the proverbial tail that wagged the dog in this case, because the court below read several Supreme Court opinions and said, you know what? I don't have jurisdiction to grant you any kind of equitable injunctive relief to stop an election. The city has an inalienable political right to do something, even if it's void. I don't disagree with that reasoning, iota, one iota. But what that reasoning misses is two important points. Number one, that wasn't all that we had asked for. We had asked for a declaratory relief. Declaratory relief doesn't involve injunctive relief. So if he truly felt, and if he was correct in his feeling, that an injunction was outside of his jurisdiction, he shouldn't have granted the plea in full. What he should have done is he should have retained jurisdiction over the declaratory relief, and he could have heard that on whatever time frame he wanted, fast or slow.
To get the declaratory relief, wouldn't your plaintiff have to have had a particularized injury?
Depends on the claim. The first claim had to do with taxpayer expenditures of dollars illegally. What we all know from the Supreme Court cases is that that is the area where you don't need particularized injury. A taxpayer can make a claim as long as he's arguing about a future expenditure of a tax dollar, not a past expenditure, which is exactly what we did in this pleading. So he doesn't need a particularized injury. Number two, he doesn't need a particularized injury here because as a voter, as a taxpayer, and as a resident, he has the right to call the city's ability to have an election, yay or nay. That right exists. It's the same argument as before. The city can't just call an election because it feels like it. So for example, they're supposed to do them in November, or they're supposed to do them in May under state law. If they just decided that they're going to have an election tomorrow afternoon.
But they didn't. This was already a scheduled election. It just added something to that election. So we're not talking about your hypothetical there. We're talking about a different situation.
Well, you're correct that it was on a regularly scheduled time, but it was a specially called election. And so the legal question for your honors, I would submit, is whether or not the city had that power. Could they call a ban on cameras or not? And the case law is clear that they couldn't. And the case law is clear that that's justiciable the time that they order it. And the other thing I want to mention before I run out of time, another reason why this was justiciable, it was right in the strike zone of declaratory relief, is that the mayor didn't actually sign the order. Now that may sound ticky-tacky, but it's not. The highest governing law for the city of Arlington is its charter. And the charter in Article 7, Section 14 says, an election ordinance isn't valid unless and until it's approved by the mayor. Section 17 says the way that the mayor approves it is he signs it to authenticate what happened, and then the city secretary attests to it. I put the city secretary in cross-examination to the task of saying, did you actually attest? Did you swear to the authenticity? And she said, well, no, because it was a rubber stamp. And so that was a fact that gave that court jurisdiction on whether or not the election order was timely called. You have to call an election 75 days before the actual date of the election. That was the 27th of February. They didn't. And so that's another reason why this wasn't outside the court's jurisdiction. Now, the court below may not agree with my arguments. They say, you're wrong. We think a rubber stamp's good enough. You're wrong. We don't think 707 takes the jurisdiction away. You're wrong. We think that they do have the power. Fine. But that's what jurisdiction's all about. He's got to call balls and strikes on whether our legal arguments are correct. He can't avoid them by saying, I don't have the power to decide them. And for those reasons, Your Honor, the plea to the jurisdiction was not properly granted. He should have retained jurisdiction. At the very least, we should have had the right to go forward on our declaratory judgment saying the city didn't have the power to call this election. We should have been able to argue that the city didn't have the power to call this election, not only because it's a camouflage referendum, but because it would take away the discretion the city was given by general law, and finally, because it wasn't a timely signed order by the mayor. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Taylor, wait, I had one question, please.
Yes.
Under your analysis or how you have the posture of this case set forth, wouldn't almost every amendment potentially be a referendum? Because unless it's a brand new, I guess, vote on something, there's no charter provision covering it all. But that every new charter that the public puts forward, it has a potential to change or modify or delete a prior charter provision.
Well, I guess I'd answer you in a couple of ways. First of all, that's a merits question. Mm-hmm. If the trial court below had jurisdiction, he could consider the question you just asked. But whether I answer you yes or no doesn't change the fact this plea was wrongfully granted. Now, answering your question, you have to look at whether or not the power is reserved for the people in the city charter in question. In Houston, you can only do it for 30 days. In Arlington, you can't do it at all. Arlington didn't give this power. So it's not that there's something inherently wrong with trying to amend the charter. The question is, do they have the power to amend the subject matter that's in their document? And that's where this got messed up. They tried to ban forever a program that the legislature said you have the discretion to do or not do as you see fit. And they tried to ban a public safety program, the city council for which has the exclusive authority to decide under both the charter and under Glass v. Smith.
Okay.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
Then how would Section 9.004, the Texas Local Government Code, ever come into play properly under your argument?
Well, it depends on whether or not it's a proper subject. So I'll give you an example. In Houston, a proper subject would be to say, you know what? It's ridiculous to still require signatures on a referendum within 30 days of passage of a law. That was something the voters passed in 1913. We've grown. We now need 20,000 signatures. That's just too arduous. So we want to have a charter change that says it's not 30 days, but it's 90 days. Or we want to have a charter change that there's no time limit.
And that's repealing something. So that's a referendum.
No, because it's modifying the charter. When you amend a charter, it's because the charter already does something. You're amending something that already exists. I can't amend a law that doesn't exist. In the charter, there is no 30-day rule if you amend it the way I just explained. So what I'm saying in this election, they weren't trying to amend the charter. They're trying to obliterate a law. And they call it a charter change, but the sole purpose was to wipe out a red light camera program. Judge Hughes said that exactly in his 2011 opinion. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Fugate.
May it please the court and good afternoon. I'm Robert Fugate. I'm a deputy city attorney at the City of Arlington here for the city and for Mayor Williams. I came in today with a big plan on what I was going to argue, but I'm really going to focus on the two things that Justice Gabriel and Justice Livingston have raised. I've done a lot of government work, and I've seen a lot of jurisdictional issues in state and federal court, the trial court level, at the appellate court level. I've never seen a single case that had five jurisdictional issues. If there was a law school exam on jurisdiction, this case would be a good test. The thing I want to talk about first, the thing I think is most important, The simplest way to resolve this case is mootness. There was a lot of discussion with Justice Gabriel about our contract, which we've included with our brief with the American Traffic Solutions. And the contract plainly has an at-will provision. The city exercised the at-will provision before this election was finally canvassed. The city made that decision. The city didn't give a reason for why it chose to terminate the contract. The red light cameras in Arlington are gone. There are no red light cameras left in Arlington. Most of the poles that the cameras were on have been taken down. And there's just a few of the poles left because we have some of them are in easements with TxDOT, and we're coordinating that with TxDOT and ATS. There's also a comment that there's nothing in the record that Mr. Taylor represents ATS. He was the one that handled the Houston case. While we're on the topic of the Houston case, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said that basically ATS and the city of Houston were in collusion, where the city of Houston argued that case so that it would lose. So when we have all these references to Justice Hughes and this great city of Houston case, you have to consider that in the light that the city of Houston didn't try to win. The cases that talk about mootness are pretty clear that the proper result when a case is moot at the appellate level is that the case is dismissed. And if the court goes that route, the court doesn't need to get into any other issue that's been raised.
But what about Mr. Taylor's position that you sort of end up in an endless circle? And that calling something moot when originally you called it not yet ripe, doesn't that give us the exact situation where a court can adjudicate?
Well, you know, that kind of gets into the evading review concept. And, you know, the way that I look at that, the original ripeness issue was because there hadn't been an election. We didn't know how the election would turn out. And so we know that now that the vote was 60-40 against the red light cameras. We know the result of the election. But when Arlington opted to exercise its at-will termination, that was an independent action of that wasn't related to the election. And that's where the circle is broken.
What about his argument that he'd still be entitled to have a ruling on his declaratory judgment action?
For what? I mean, it's part of it. It's moot. There's nothing that this court or Judge Lowe's court can resolve. There's no longer any dispute between Mr. Wiederman and the city of Arlington that can be fixed by the court. The court can't issue an order that says, you've got to go back and undo this. You've got to go back and re-enter a contract with ATS. There's no court order that can be issued at this point that could require Arlington to put the cameras back up.
But couldn't that be the argument that this could be repeated, that there could be another referendum or petition or whatever you want to call it to amend the charter, and that's something that they're entitled to a ruling on?
I think, you know, somewhere down the road, if the citizens decided, you know, if there's a huge increase in car wrecks at red lights and there was another petition drive, and certainly the citizens could vote to change what is effectively Arlington's constitution. That would be not a simple matter if the cameras were still up and it was the city deciding and the city said, well, now that the case is over, we're going to switch the cameras back on. That's a different matter than having to have an entire election. It would take a petition drive, another petition drive, and it would take 5% of the voters, and it would take going through that process of screening out which ones were actually registered voters, as in the case of Mr. Wiederman was not a registered voter when the suit was filed. And that would be the process. So what I'm trying to say is it's not a simple process. This isn't a one way or the other. In order to do that, it would be a major undertaking. And it would be such a change of political will in the city that it's not going to happen anytime soon. That's what we learned from this election.
I mean, jump to a different question then. What's your response to Mr. Taylor's argument that Mr. Wiederman did not have to have a particularized injury to maintain his lawsuit for declaratory judgment?
Well, for a response to that, I'll rely on the Texas Supreme Court in the City of Austin versus Thompson case, which is 219 Southwest 2nd, 57, 1949. It's the first case of our four cases where the Supreme Court has been very strong on protecting the right of elections. And that case involved a taxpayer who was upset, and the City of Austin council needed to fill a vacancy on its council, and their charter said that the council was to appoint a new person to take that place. And instead of doing that, the council members decided they'd hold an election, and whoever the people picked, that's who they would appoint. And Mr. Thompson didn't agree with that. He felt like it was a waste of taxpayer money, and he filed a lawsuit. And this is what the Texas Supreme Court said. The courts of this state have no jurisdiction to interfere with the political rights of the people to hold an election. And by holding the election is meant every step pertaining thereto, including declaring the result. This rule obtains even though the election called is void. The right to call or hold a void election is a political right of a political right that the courts have no jurisdiction to interfere with. And so that's what the court said in 1949, and the court has been consistent with that, that it doesn't matter if it's taxpayer money that is spent on an election, because the courts have said consistently that the right of Texans to hold an election is a right in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 2. And the language is really important, because what it talks about is that when the Texans created our government, they didn't give this right over to the government. This is a right they reserve. This is not a grant of the government to the people. This is a right the people have to hold an election. It can be void. It can be challenged later if there's some act that's inappropriate. But what you can't do is tell the people they can't have the election. We had a lot of talk about the Glass case, and I want to hit on Glass real quick. And the idea that was raised for the Glass case is that you can have a field that's preempted from the people. And a lot of this argument is based on the idea that the provision of the Transportation Code that allows for red light cameras says that the governing body may adopt red light cameras. And so the idea is that only the city council can make a decision, yay or nay, on red light cameras, and that this concept has been taken from the people by this governing body language. And in the brief, Mr. Taylor cites page 649 and 650 of Glass. There's no cite to page 651. And page 651 starts out at the very top of the page, and it talks about the legislature frequently uses the term council, city council, whatever it is. In this case, it's governing body. That's a general reference. That in no way means that the people can't have a petition to change their charter. That language is fully discussed in Glass. So this idea that Glass takes away the right of the people, it's not in Glass. And so I would ask the court to focus on that page. And the other thing, I did have one handout, which I believe was distributed, and Mr. Taylor made a reference to it, the petition to ban red light cameras. It clearly refers to section 9.004 of the Texas Local Government Code. It wouldn't matter if the City of Arlington's charter said we could vote on this, we couldn't vote on it, or the way that the charter actually is, it just has no reference to it at all. It doesn't matter what the city charter says, because the state law tells us what the law is. And it's the state constitution that gives this right to the people. And the petition was clearly done pursuant to state law. There's no reference to Arlington's charter whatsoever. And it just has no, that idea that there's nothing in our charter that allows this. It just doesn't matter, because it's the state law and the state constitution that allows it. So, I'm not yellow yet, so are there any questions? Or I want to talk just a little bit about the four cases. And the four cases, every one of them is very clear. And the last one, the Bloom versus Lanier case, it's a Houston case, and it says if you have a ballot proposition from the city that's doesn't fairly represent the proposal, you can have court action to make sure the ballot is fair, that the ballot fairly states the proposition. But that court also says you can't interfere with the election. And in all of the cases, I quoted the one that has really strong language, but they all have that kind of language. I think just to wrap up, that the mootness is the simplest way to resolve this case. I think basically the separation of powers would be just as simple also. And they're all jurisdictional issues. The ripeness, you know, you could argue that ripeness isn't the way to go because, I mean, the election is now had, but I think at least for the relief that was sought to ban the election, which was clearly the intent of the petition, that doesn't matter now. That's gone. Taxpayer standing, I haven't hit a lot on that, but, in addition to the City of Austin case, which is directly on point, of course, there's the Bland Independent School District versus Blue case that, at least to my reading, and I'll give you the site on that, it's 34 Southwest 3rd, 547, Texas, 2000. I have a quote from Bland. Governments cannot operate if every citizen who concludes that a public official has abused his discretion is granted the right to come into court. And I certainly read that case to say that taxpayer standing is very limited. And what you, I think Justice Livingston raised it, that you have to have, or Justice Gabriel, I'm not sure which now, you have to have some kind of unique injury. And one thing that we did in this case, we had two live hearings before Judge Lowe. On the second hearing, we did have three witnesses, and one of them was Mr. Wiederman, who testified that he was like a lot of other Arlington citizens who would like to keep the cameras, and that he was not going to be hurt if the election went forward, and that his position was really no different than anyone else's. And that is not enough under Bland, and certainly not enough under the City of Austin case. So, ask that the court affirm Judge Lowe's grant of the plea to the jurisdiction, and that could either be on the three issues that were before Judge Lowe, which were standing, separation of powers, and ripeness, or the new issue, which is before this court, which I point out has not been challenged in any way. There's no factual challenge to that before this court. And frankly, we know at a minimum that Mr. Taylor's name is on some cases for ATS, but we also know that Mr. Wiederman didn't know how Mr. Taylor came to be his lawyer, didn't know how former Chief Justice Jefferson's name happened to be on his pleadings, who has never filed a single thing in his case or had anything to do with it. So I think it is fair to say that ATS, if they had anything to say, they would be here. But as Mr. Taylor pointed out, they're not a party, and any issue to them is not even before the court. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fugate. Mr. Taylor, rebuttal?
May it please the court. Yes, I'll hurry. I know I only got 5 minutes. All this business about ATS, I want to put that to bed. ATS is not a voter. ATS is not a resident. ATS couldn't file a lawsuit pre-election. A citizen is the only one that can file a lawsuit pre-election. Jody Wiederman testified why he filed this lawsuit. And so how it's funded, who cares about who's involved, has zero to do with jurisdiction. Number two, this comment that I heard that there was some collusive conduct in the Houston case is frankly flabbergasting. If you look at the Houston file, which is something the court can take judicial notice of, we litigated for over 2 years. Thompson and Knight represented very, very well our arch enemies in that case. They briefed not hundreds, but thousands of pages of briefing in that case. I argued against them tooth and toenail for 2 years, and we got that favorable summary judgment. It was far from collusive. The next thing I wanted to point out is they keep bringing up the getting rid of the ATS contract, that somehow takes away a voter's right to complain about whether this was a validly called election. Whether this was a validly called election is ripe as can be right now. How could that become moot? It's always ripe. It could be collaterally attacked. All you have to do is, there's a case called Sherman. There's another case called Rayburn. These aren't jurisdictional cases. But if you look at Sherman and Rayburn, what they say is that you can go after the city's right to call an election pre-election by deck action, or if you wanted to, post-election by election contest. But you're not required to file an election contest. You can go pre-election, which is what Jody did. Now, the question of whether or not the city had the power to call the election doesn't change and doesn't hinge upon whether ATS's contract survived. All it deals with is whether or not when they called the election, they had the right to call the election. And if they didn't, they didn't. So there's no sine qua non between the two. This capable of repetition yet evading review, I think that is pretty clear that if we're gonna say Jody Wiederman didn't have the right pre-election to file a lawsuit, and he doesn't have a right post-election, that's the poster child for having somebody's illegal conduct evading review. Why would the city get to improperly call an election and get away with it and never have that looked at by a court of law on substance? Doesn't make any sense. Now, two more real important points. All of these four Supreme Court cases you heard the city's lawyers talk about, all of those hinge on you can't interfere with an election validly called. If you want to get into substantive validity, you do it after the election, you can't stop the election. What we're saying is it wasn't validly called. And the last thing is that they quoted to you from the Thompson case, that was 1949. The Glass case was 2 years later, and it specifically referenced the Thompson case. Glass is more recent than Thompson. And Glass is the one that I said, and I'll quote and then sit down, has the subject matter of the proposed ordinance been withdrawn, expressly or by necessary implication, by either the general laws, that would be the transportation code saying you can't take away the discretion to have a red light camera program, or charter itself. And so if the contention is correct that it's outside the purview, it follows that by necessary implication, the subject matter of the ordinance has been withdrawn from the field in which the initiatory process is operative. And so my point is that under the Glass decision, which has never been reversed, never been criticized, never been overruled, there's an intellectual distinction between did you validly call the election versus once the outcome is known, was the outcome something that can survive legal and constitutional scrutiny? Two different things. They peacefully coexist with one another. For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that you reverse and have this case decided on the merits. What the trial court will decide on the merits is up to him, but he has the power to decide.
All right, thank you, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Fugate. We appreciate all the briefing y'all have put into this, and we appreciate your arguments here today as well. And that's our only case for submissions this afternoon, so we will now adjourn.